This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. Anthony Weiner bears all, and even with two new GOP presidential candidates and a Second Amendment update to the midnight ride, it's Wednesday and time for a...
And I really regret it.
...edition of The Political Junkie.
There you go again.
When I hear your new ideas, I'm reminded of that ad. Where's the beef?
Extremism in the defense of liberty is no vice.
Senator, you're no Jack Kennedy.
You don't have Nixon to kick around anymore.
Lipstick.
But I'm the decider.
Every Wednesday, political junkie Ken Rudin joins us to recap the week in politics. Rick Santorum and Mitt Romney kick off their presidential bids while Sarah Palin steals the limelight in New Hampshire and revises Revere in Boston. Bad job numbers deflate the president's polls. A leading blue dog retires in Oklahoma and the House votes on not one but two Libya resolutions. In just a few minutes, we'll speak with campaign consultants Anna Greenberg and Vin Weber about how to advise a political candidate not to be incredibly dumb. Later in the program, Patrick Sims on tourism in Yemen. But first, political junkie Ken Rudin joins us here in Studio 3A. As usual, we begin with a trivia question. Hey, Ken.
Hi, Neil. You know, before the trivia question, you know that we always ask the winners to send in a photo for our wall of shame. Are we going to change that this week? Or
No.
I think that has to change.
I think we're going to keep it that
okay,
way.
Okay, well. Good luck, Anthony Weiner. Okay, well, anyway, this week's political trivia question. Rick Santorum announced his candidacy for president this week. Now, in his last campaign, he was defeated for re-election to his Pennsylvania Senate seat. Here's the question. Name the last two people who ran for president after having been defeated for re-election to the Senate.
Two winners today. Give us a call, 800-989-8255. Email talk@npr.org. The question again, the last two people to run for president of the United States after having been defeated for election to the United States Senate or re-election to the United States Senate. If you think you know the answer, again, 800-989-8255. Ken, we're going to get to the Weiner issue in a few minutes, but the presumed front runner is now the front runner?
Well, I assume you're talking about Mitt Romney on the Republican side. And
shown running dead even with the president of the United States.
Yes, but we are quoting polls in June of 2011, and I think there's a long way to go before Iowa, New Hampshire, let alone the general election. But yes, you could say that Mitt Romney is probably as strong as any Republican out there, raising a ton of money. And the latest Washington Post poll of registered voters had Mitt Romney 49-46 over Barack Obama. I can't believe I'm quoting polls in June of 2011. But yes, I mean, Mitt Romney has had a very interesting week. He did officially declare his candidacy.
In the meantime, as he declared that candidacy, most of the TV cameras were a few miles down the road watching as the Sarah Palin bus tour pulled into New Hampshire as well. And in response, the former governor of Massachusetts said, well, he didn't really mind.
No, in a lot of respects, it's the best thing that could happen to me. Right now, your greatest enemy is overexposure. People get tired of seeing the same person day in and day out. People are going to start focusing on the elections probably after Labor Day.
That's deft to avoid overexposure on the day you announce your campaign.
Well, of course, you know, announcing for candidacy in these later cycles are not the same way as it used to be in the old days, which was very dramatic. This time they announce an exploratory committee, then they announce they're going to make an official announcement, then they announce. So it's really, by the time he actually announced the day after it, the New Hampshire Union Leader, the statewide paper there, had Sarah Palin on its front page. Mitt Romney was on page three.
And speaking of Sarah Palin, one of the reasons she's on everybody's front page is her grip of American history asked she called it a gotcha question in Boston, Massachusetts. The question being, what did you take away from your visit here today? She then had to explain her misstatement about Paul Revere and the Midnight Ride.
Part of his ride was to warn the British that were already there that, hey, you're not going to succeed. You're not going to take American arms. You are not going to beat our own well-armed persons, individual private militia that we have. He did warn the British. And in a shout-out, gotcha type of question that was asked of me, I answered candidly, and I know my American history.
Well, no. You know, she's always the victim. She's always, everybody's out to gotcha her. But the point is, first of all, nobody asked a question about Paul Revere. This was her own interpretation. And, you know, she could have had fun with it. She could have made light of it. She could have just said, okay, you know, mayor culpa, the guy we voted for in New York City.
Exactly.
She could have done a mayor culpa. But instead, you know, they're out to get me. It's, you know, I'm never wrong. It's always their fault. They're always, you know, they're always out to spring traps on me. And that was just, you know, just a mistake, and she should own up to it, but she doesn't.
Anyway, she's not the first to have gotten some revolutionary history wrong. Michelle Bachmann put Concord and Lexington in the wrong state not so long
yes,
ago.
Yes, and she said right away, she said, look, that was my mistake. I was carried away by it. I was in New Hampshire, and I did that. But Sarah Palin will never make a mistake. You know, she's always the victim.
In the meantime, we have we mentioned Mitt Romney kicking off his campaign. Tim Pawlenty, the former governor of Minnesota, also kicked off his campaign and released his economic plan this week.
If you can find a service or a good available on Google or the internet, then the federal government probably doesn't need to be providing that good or service.
And that's just one soundbite from a pretty radical economic plan.
It certainly went further than any Republican in Congress, let alone anybody running for president, talking about $2 trillion in tax cuts, far more, much more in spending cuts. And he's basically daring his Republican would-be rivals to see if they could match it. But really, it's a very, very conservative thing. He's talking about 5% growth, economic growth per year, when right now I think it's 1.8% growth. So he's expecting a lot of things to come from these proposals of his, but a lot of people think one is dead on arrival, and two, it could lead to much higher deficits.
And there is a new candidate as well this Monday, Rick Santorum, the former senator, announced his campaign for president.
Right, former two-term senator from Pennsylvania. He announced in Pennsylvania, as we said in the trivia question, that you know he lost his last race, but very strong anti-abortion credentials, very strong economic conservative. But again, there are many other Republicans who share those kind of philosophical beliefs.
In the meantime, we have people on the phone who think they know the answer to this week's trivia question. The last two people to run for president of the United States who previously lost re-election bids to the United States Senate. 800-989-8255, email talk@npr.org. And let's see if we can start with Douglas. And Douglas with us from San Francisco.
Hi.
Hi, Douglas. You're on the air.
Mike Gravel.
Mike Gravel of Alaska.
Mike Gravel of Alaska is one of the two answers.
Ding,
and
ding,
that was
ding.
Very, very quick. Mike Gravel was defeated for re-election in 1980, and he ran for president in 2008. He is one of the two answers, and Douglas gets a T-shirt.
Douglas gets a Political Junkie T-shirt. I'm going to put you on hold in exchange for your particulars.
Say it again.
We're going to ask you for
a digital photo of yourself
in the Junkie T-shirt to post on our Wall of Shame. So
that could get you in trouble, Douglas.
You know how to do that on Twitter, Douglas? Anyway, congratulations. We're going to put him on hold. In the meantime, we have one more winner possibly out there. Is it Tim? Tim calling from Yorktown in Virginia.
Yes.
Yes, you're on the air.
would one of them be Richard Nixon, who I think lost both the Senate and lost a presidential bid before he was elected in 68.
No, well, actually, Richard Nixon was defeated for governor in 1962. He
You're
was
not
a senator.
Have Nixon to kick around.
He was a senator in the 40s, and he became and he resigned as senator to become vice president in 52. But he was never defeated for the Senate.
Nice try, Tim.
Okay.
Thanks very much. Let's see if we can go next to this is Randy. Randy with us from Elkhart, Indiana.
Hi, Walter Mondale.
Walter Mondale also resigned his Senate seat to become vice president. Now, he did run for the Senate, but it wasn't re-election to the Senate because he was already out of office and he lost to Norm Coleman.
So he did it the other way around. He ran for president and then ran for Senate.
Okay. He picked
and
after,
lost, yes.
After Paul Wellstone had died.
Let's see if we go next. This is Walt. Walt with us from Tallahassee.
Hi there. Yes, my guess was Abraham Lincoln.
Abraham Lincoln, going back to the pre-primary days.
Well, actually, Abraham Lincoln was defeated for the Senate in 1858, but he wasn't defeated for re-election because he never was a senator.
Ooh, and wasn't one of the last two in any case. No. Walt, that's good, Walt.
And he was shot in the temple.
okay.
So he was the first Jewish president, right?
Let's see if we go next to, this is Jim, and Jim with us from Foster City in California.
Yes, Carol Moseley Braun.
That is the other correct answer.
Ding, ding, ding.
Carol Moseley Braun was defeated in Illinois in 1998, sought the Democratic nomination for president in 2004. So Mike Gravel and Carol Moseley Braun are the two correct answers. Another earlier answer would have been George McGovern, defeated in 1980, ran for president in 84, but not the most recent.
Two most recent. Right. Jim, thanks very much for the call. We're going to put you on hold. And again, you'll get a Political Junkie T-shirt in exchange for, well, perhaps damaging evidence. we're going to put you on hold. Anyway, thanks very much to everybody who called and emailed.
And make sure they send their picture with certitude.
Okay. And in the meantime, Dan Boren, one of the leaders of the Blue Dog Democrats, announced plans to, he's not going to run for re-election.
He's the only Democrat in the Oklahoma congressional delegation, and he usually wins very handily. He won with only 57% last time, but a huge Republican year in Oklahoma. He may even run for statewide office. I think he wants to go back to Oklahoma. His father, of course, was former governor David Boren.
And senator.
Former governor, former senator, and also the current president of the University of Oklahoma. The Republicans think they'll take that seat, but Brad Carson, who used to have that seat, gave it up to run for the Senate against Tom Coburn, is talking about running it. So this will be a good opportunity for the Republicans to pick up a seat.
And there were two votes in the United States House of Representatives last week on the issue of Libya, this having to do with the president's failure to abide by the War Powers Act.
Well, the War Powers Act says that if there's military, the president decides to have military involvement overseas, you have to give Congress within 60 days explanation of why this was authorized, and it's more than 60 days. I believe it's 76 days right now, and the president has not gone to Congress. The first resolution was by Dennis Kucinich, who said, I want them out. Oh, I want all troops out within 15 days.
There aren't any troops there, but participation in
the conflict. Well, participation, exactly. But it was interesting. 87 Republicans voted yes on that, only 61 Democrats. So it's interesting who the real anti-war party is, depending on who's in the White House. That is interesting. If this were a Republican in the White House, I suspect there have been a lot of more Democrats saying get out, you know, within 15 days.
And the second resolution?
But this was by John Boehner, who said, look, you know, the president, basically, you have to justify your mission. You have to come to us within 2 weeks, I guess, 14 days, to justify so it's a non-binding resolution, but basically it showed that this satisfaction in Congress about the lack of transparency from the Obama administration.
Or consultation with Congress.
Exactly. Lack of same, right.
And even though every president since the law was passed says, I don't agree with the War Powers Act, I don't think it applies to me, everyone has complied with that part of it up till now.
And so it came from Republicans, and that's interesting.
We're talking with political junkie Ken Rudin. Up next, politicians behaving badly. John Edwards and Anthony Weiner are just the latest examples. What does it take to survive a political sex scandal? Stay with us. I'm Neil Conan. It's the Talk of the Nation from NPR News. This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. It's Wednesday. Political junkie Ken Rudin is here, as he is most weeks. Check out his blog and his podcast and take a shot at that devilish scuttle button puzzle. You can find all that at npr.org/junkie. We ask ourselves what Ken could possibly be thinking, well, at least twice every program. This week he's in good company. There's John Edwards, indicted on charges that he used campaign money for hide an affair, and Congressman Anthony Weiner, after insisting his Twitter account was hacked, he finally admits, yes, I took those pictures and I sent them. In a rambling, tear-filled news conference on Monday, Weiner refused to resign, even though he says he knew what he was doing was wrong all along.
From time to time, I would say to myself, this is a mistake, or this conversation someone could listen in on or translate to someone else. I know that there is the sense that everything is part of a plan and it was thought through and calculated. In this case, it was just me doing a very dumb thing.
If your elected official was in a sex scandal, how did that affect your vote next time around? Give us a call, 800-989-8255. Email us, talk@npr.org. You can also join the conversation at our website. Go to npr.org, click on Talk of the Nation. Joining us here in Studio 3A is Anna Greenberg, a senior vice president and principal at the consulting firm of Greenberg Quinlan Rosner Research. And good to have you back.
Thanks for having me.
Also with us, former Representative Vin Weber, now managing partner at the lobbying firm Clark and Weinstock, and co-chairman for Tim Pawlenty's presidential campaign. Vin, good to see you again.
Great to be here.
And Anna Greenberg,
Wow.
This was a liberal paladin, one of the most effective liberals in Congress, said to be in line to be the next mayor of the city of New York. It looks like his career is up in smoke.
Not necessarily. I think certainly it's in great jeopardy, and whatever future he has, it will take a long time for him to rebuild what he has. But I'm not defending him. I'm just suggesting that if he didn't do anything illegal and he stays married to his wife and his constituents want to reelect him, you know, he has the chance to stay in Congress, and maybe in 5-10 years, if he sort of keeps his nose to the grindstone, he could rebuild. I don't think it's necessarily the case. If he did something illegal, then I think it's a very different story.
And I assume that the minority leader, Nancy Pelosi, had no choice but to ask for an ethics investigation.
She had no choice. And I think that the Democrats in Congress have really responded quite appropriately with their deafening silence.
You do know, though, that Tim Kaine, the former chairman of the Democratic National Committee, called for resignation.
Right. He's also running for office.
There is also,
in a conservative state.
Yes.
There's also the majority leader of the United States Senate, Harry Reid, who was asked what he might tell Congressman Wiener if he called him for advice.
I know Congressman Wiener, and I wish there was some way I can defend him, but I can't.
And he said, basically, I'd tell him to call somebody else.
Right. And I meant, by deafening silence, I meant no one coming to defend him, not suggesting that people weren't being critical of him.
And Ken, is a one of the safer Democratic seats in the United States Congress. If Anthony Weiner does not get a challenge in the Democratic primary, he's presumably, in a good position for reelection.
Well, yes, but there's also the possibility that, you know, New York loses 2 congressional seats in the redistricting in 2012, and the Democrats are likely to lose 1 seat to downstate, Republicans upstate. It's very possible they may want to tinker with Anthony Weiner's district, which straddles Brooklyn and Queens.
And Vin Weber, Republicans, both in the House and in the Senate, have been quick to say, Mr. Weiner, you should resign.
Yeah, Eric Cantor said that he should resign. Reince Priebus, the chairman of the Republican Party, said that he should resign. I hope that going, and I think that's fine, but I hope going forward we don't hear a whole lot more from them. They should just allow this thing to play out. You know, I do think, again, as Anna said, I'm not defending certainly anything he did, but the Democrats have given him the best opportunity possible, legitimately, to defend himself. They asked immediately for an investigation by the Ethics Committee. It allows him and anybody else that wants to say, we just need to allow this to play out through the ethics process. And people have survived worse.
Well, you can make the case that Barney Frank had that embarrassment in 1989 and served to be an effective Democratic spokesman in the House.
Or President Clinton.
Well, he was impeached, but of course he just survived.
True, but he stayed in office.
He stayed in office. Yeah. And then you have the opposite. You have Chris Lee, upstate New York, who took pictures of himself without a shirt. I mean, far less graphic, I think, and he resigned within hours.
Well, I think the Republicans were pretty anxious to get rid of him. Republicans, remember, lost, as you know well, Ken, lost control of the House in 2006.
Mark Foley.
For a couple of reasons, but the number one was probably Mark Foley and congressional corruption. And I think that the new leadership, John Boehner and those folks, clearly understand they don't want to go through that again, and they wanted to solve this problem quickly.
And we also should mention David Vitter, of course, who got his name found among the D.C. Madam's clientele and then reelected to the United States Senate last fall.
Yeah, but substantially reelected. And, of course, people there say that's just a little different standard that people have in Louisiana. I don't know about that. But you can survive these things if you do your job and you do them well. There are some qualifiers, and I don't know if Congressman Weiner is going to fall into these categories. But number one, do we find out more? I mean, that's the big risk. If this is the end of the revelations, as unseemly as it may be, he probably could get through it. But if we learn more things, there seems to be no end. The political pressure on him to resign will just become overwhelming. Second one that I think is important is, what does his wife say when she finally says something about this? She's, from everything I can tell, more highly regarded in this town than he is. She's
certainly right now.
She has maintained not a silence, but a respectful distance from this whole process. We'll see what happens with her. That could affect things as well.
To her credit, she did not show up at that press conference with Anthony Weiner.
Yeah, I agree with that. The last point I'd say is, you never know about this, but the reason he might have wanted to resign for his own good is if he and his lawyers are not quite certain if they've done anything illegal. Because the reason people resign is to head off an ethics investigation before the Ethics Committee investigation finds out an illegality and has to turn it over to the Justice Department for possible prosecution. Now, maybe he's absolutely confident that this is not going to go in that direction, but if he's not absolutely confident, he might have thought about getting out to protect himself.
And that's the situation John Ensign finds himself in. That ethics investigation completed even after he resigned, their recommendation sent to the Justice Department, which is now looking into it. In the meantime, both of you are campaign consultants. Vin Weber, of course, you also ran and were elected to office. Do you breach this subject ever? Do you ever say, well, you know, there's something awkward we need to establish before the campaign begins?
On occasion, yes. First of all, let's be clear. I have never had a candidate that I've worked for who's had anything like this happen. But sure, I think you have a lot of conversations with people when they get ready to run for office about their history and their background, and not just sex, but their finances. If they own a business, have they ever been sued? There's a whole set of questions you ask. We actually almost always with a serious campaign hire a professional researcher to actually dig up dirt on our own candidates. I've had candidates discover that they had multiple liens on multiple properties they didn't know about. So it absolutely comes up. I think that when it comes to issues of relationships, the most touchy situation, I think, is when people are divorced and remarried and when that relationship started. So you have someone like Newt Gingrich, who's in a sort of an uncomfortable position because his current wife, the relationship started when he was married to his last wife. So you find yourself asking questions sometimes of your clients. When did you start dating this person? Were you legally separated yet? So I've had that come up. But, you know, like I said, you pretty much they have to pretty much tell you everything.
Does it help, Vin Weber, if you ask that question, having been in that position yourself?
It helps. I have to, first of all, just to clarify, that's Anna's a professional. My business is actually lobbying. I advise candidates as a volunteer activity as a Republican. But I have had those conversations with candidates over the years. I've learned some things I didn't want to learn, then you figure out how to defend against them. I've also had candidates lie to me about it. And I think that's the biggest problem you've got is convincing the candidate, or in this case, I guess, the office holder, that the problem is that he or she cannot be objective about judging their own problems. It's kind of the old story about he who has himself as a lawyer has a fool for a client. You know, it's very hard to convince a candidate for high office that they may have some problems in their background that they need to come clean on and find out how other people can help defend them. Because I've been through it on the negative side with people.
And is the problem, as we keep reading in these dissections of the Anthony Weiner and following on the everybody else, and is it the sense of entitlement that people who have been elected to a high office have? They come to Washington, D.C., and orientation seems to be consist of, and here are your shiny new privileges, your shiny new toys, and they hire a staff which are very flattering, and they are flattered by lobbyists, and, well, it seems that power is endless.
Well, that's true. I mean, you do get here and you get surrounded by people that think they can advance themselves by making you think that you can do no wrong, and that's not good. A sensible person elected to office needs to have a little perspective and want at least some people around them that are willing to tell them the truth about things and help ground them. And that doesn't always happen. You find a lot of people up here that are surrounded by what we might call sycophants who are more than eager to tell them what they want to hear, not what they should hear.
And we see that. We also see that with members of people in business and people in athletes. I mean, it's not just restricted to the political
field. It's just that it all becomes public when you're out here.
Right. But I want to just note that I've been doing this 10 years, and I've never had a candidate, after doing all this digging, hadn't done anything illegal or, having a lien. But I'm just saying it's pretty rare, honestly. And the other thing I'd say is for as many Anthony Weiners or people who are corrupted by power, there are other members who won't take a free ticket to anything, mm-hmm. who pay for That's every one exactly of their own right. flights and won't go on Codells unless it's to Afghanistan. So we never hear the stories about the members who actually go above and beyond to be ethical about the use of taxpayer dollars.
That's an important point, and I should have made it instead of letting you make it. But most of the members up there work hard. They're ethical. And it's unfortunate that the minority dragged down the reputation of the institution, which is an important institution.
We want to get some listeners in on the conversation. If there was a sex scandal involving a politician where you live, how did that change your vote next time around? 800-989-8255, email talk@npr.org. And Brian's with us from Elkhart.
Yeah, how you doing?
Go ahead.
Yeah, I was telling the screen there, we have our Mark Sauter here recently, but I guess my big question is, what virus or disease is going around Washington that these high officials that know they're scrutinized so much don't think they're going to get caught. And why would they even take the chance? I mean, 4-8 years? I mean, they can't hold on to themselves that long? I mean, these are supposed to be our highest and brightest people. I just don't get this. I'll take my answer off the air.
All right. Of course, Mark Sauter, the Republican member of Congress, having an affair with a staff member.
That's right, from Indiana, and he resigned, yes. But, I mean, we're also going on the same week. We're coming off the indictment of John Edwards. John Edwards is running for president of the United States while trying to not only hide an affair, but trying to hide a child that he fathered to this affair. And he's running for president.
And, Anna, that raises the listener's question. How could you not know that these things are going to become public? How could you not know, given the example of Congressman Lee in upstate New York, that this kind of thing could blow up in your face?
Well, first of all, I'm not a man, so the three men in this room should probably answer the question about why men do these things, because it is mostly men. I think Anthony Weiner himself pretty much said he knew it was dumb, but he did it anyway. So I think that he knew he could get caught. And one of the things that's actually very interesting about this story from a social media perspective is that, and according to an article in the New York Times today, there was a group that was tracking Weiner's Twitter, both his followers and who he was following, and was actually contacting independently some of the women that he was in touch with, especially ones they thought were underage, and that this is the group that discovered the picture and shared it online and sort of set everything in motion. So, you know, not only is it dangerous to use Facebook and Twitter to communicate with people because it's a very public forum, but moreover, people have the ability to actually, in an organized way, monitor you. So I'm sure there's a good lesson learned here for many politicians who are using these social media tools.
And he knew he was being monitored, and yet nothing changed with his behavior.
Well, he sent the picture. He said he meant to send it as a private message, but intended he sent it to his entire account.
Right, but he knew he was being monitored because he was taking things off once he became alerted to the fact that he was being monitored.
Anna Greenberg, Senior Vice President and Principal at Greenberg Quinlan Rossner Research, also with us Vin Weber, former Republican Congressman from Minnesota, co-chair of Tim Pawlenty's presidential campaign, and of course, political junkie Ken Rudin is with us. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. And let's talk with Daniel. Daniel with us from Sacramento.
Hi, how are you today?
Good, thanks.
Great. I just wanted to make the comment that in the age of social media and data mining, many individuals, I think, who are elected officials are going to be running into problems like this. I do not personally believe that what someone does in their own private life behind their own closed doors should really affect the votes of individuals for various offices, assuming it falls in the category of being standard behavior. I mean, I think that a big problem in the American suburbs is, you know, individuals cheating on one another when, let's say, you know, Joe's at work. So if they're doing a great job from what they're supposed to be doing, I think that political trumping up, Bill Clinton being a case, political trumping up has really caused the demise of many good politicians for, you know, things that are kind of standard in our media anyways. I'll take my answer.
All right,
my
Daniel, thanks very much. And Vin Weber, that distinction might be legal or illegal. And in the case of Congressman Weiner, again, if nothing else comes out, he maintains there's nothing illegal about flirting, even if you're being dumb about it.
You get to a subjective judgment. I understand what the caller's saying, but you get to a subjective judgment. I would just point out, if you're in the private sector, an executive, and you might get by with murder. On the other hand, most executives can be dismissed if they engage in behavior that affects the company they work for badly from a reputational standpoint. In other words, they could be doing all their jobs effectively for the company, but if they do something on the side that embarrasses the company, that is often grounds for firing. It seems to me, well, being too judgmental about any one person, you shouldn't have a lower standard for the Congress of the United States.
Here's an email from Charles in Portland. Our mayor was involved in a cover-up scandal during and after his re-election. I do not plan to vote for him in the next election, not because of his sexual preference or choices, but because he lied, as did Weiner. This is not the example I want to send about my city or my country. Lying, Anna. Again, every consultant everywhere says, if something has come out, get the whole story out right away. Whatever you do, covering it up is much worse than anything you did in the first place.
That's exactly right. What do they say? It's not the crime, it's the cover-up. And if you go from example of John Edwards, he's being indicted because of the cover-up. Ensign's being indicted because of the cover-up. You know, Weiner, part of why people found the press conference on Monday so disturbing and interesting was that he was, you know, emphatically said my Twitter account was hacked for a week. Lying is a big, big problem because voters wonder if you lie about this, what else will you lie about?
And it's a very good question. And Vin Weber, in the larger context of things, does it contribute to the atmosphere people wonder about running for office in the first place? Is this worth it?
I worry that it really does. I think that it discourages good people from wanting to run for office, or forget about even running for office. It discourages good people from wanting to get involved in the political process, helping candidates legitimately acting as citizens should. And money scandals have that effect. Sex scandals have that effect. Good people decide that they just don't want to touch that dirty process. And unfortunately, that dirty process is us and our government and our society.
Vin Weber with us here in Studio 3A. His guy, Tim Pawlenty, will be at that Republican debate next week in New Hampshire. We'll be talking about that next week with Ken Rudin here on The Political Junkie. Anna Greenberg also joined us in Studio 3A. She's a Democratic political campaign consultant. And, well, we'll be catching up with both of them as we move on down the road. Thank you both very much for your time today.
Thank you.
Great to be here.
Ken, we'll see you next Wednesday.
Thanks, Neil.
Coming up, the accidental war correspondent, Patrick Sims, went to Yemen to write a piece about offbeat travel. Then the revolution broke out. Stay with us. It's the Talk of the Nation from NPR News.